how's that that calculation on an answer for the listeners? The different from what's the vacancy rate that's published by, you know, REIP, REIQ?
Yeah, they all vary dramatically, and it comes down to a number of things. Some of the listings might have an available date that's in the future. So if that's ignored, you might think that the property is currently vacant, whereas it's not. It's still occupied until that future date. There are differences in when these calculations are made. You might have, say, 28 days, so 4 weeks, or you might have a 31-day month. They might do the calculation in the middle of the month and say, well, this is a snapshot in time. So everyone has their own different ways of calculating it. Some do it at the postcode level. Some include the bedroom count. So the smaller, the more granular it is, you think it's more accurate, it's actually more statistically unreliable. The further you zoom out and include a larger sample size, the less accuracy you have, but the more consistent the figure is. So I always look at an historical chart of vacancy rate, because it can just bounce up and down, especially in thinly traded markets. From month to month, it bounces all over the place. So you really want a line of best fit, and that means looking at an historical chart.
Beautiful, beautiful. Okay, so we've talked about stock on market, auction clearance rate, online search interest, days on market, vacancy rate. What's next?
Vendor discount. This one's an important one for me too. So the vendor discount is the difference between the original asking price when the property is first listed for sale and the eventual sale price. And that might be only 5%. In some cases, it might actually be a negative figure when the buyer makes an offer that's beyond what the asking price was, which happens, of course, in markets where demand exceeds supply. So the smaller the figure is, the smaller the discount is, the higher demand is relative to supply.
So that's the percentage difference we're also talking about here.
Yes.
So we're working it to a percentage. So if it's offers above 500,000 and it ultimately sells for 450, we would work out that percentage, and that's obviously a negative. In other words, it's a percentage of the discount offered from the original asking price.
Yeah, so in that example, 500,000, it sells for 450,000, so that's a $50,000 drop. As a percentage, that's 10% of the original asking price.
Yeah.
So that's quite an extreme discount. That would be a market where if every property selling in that market was discounted by 10%, so the average was 10%, I'd say that's a market that's under stress. There's a bad market where there's oversupply.
Yep.
And although you don't really see it very often, if the discount is actually negative, then it means everything's selling for a premium above the asking price, and that's an astonishing market. And of course, as investors, we want to chase those markets where demand exceeds supply, so we'll be looking for the smallest possible discount.
So how do we chase that data?
Well, you've got to keep your eye on these portals. You've got to notice the first time a new property comes on online, and you would jot down, maybe in a spreadsheet, the price of the property. And then you'd wait until it sells. Then you've got to find out how much it sold for, and then calculate that discount as a percentage, like you said. And then you do that for all the properties in that market over, say, a period of 3 or 4 months. Will give you a good idea of what the vendor discount typically is. So there's a lot of work involved.
That is a massive amount of time and a massive amount of work. So there are some, you know, obviously there's professional portals out there like CoreLogic who measure those types of things, but you're going to be paying, you know, hundreds if not thousands and thousands of dollars for that data. So just be mindful of that. But if you've identified the markets that you want to watch, it's achievable, but just be mindful that there's going to be literally tens and tens of hours of analyst work in there.
All right, so it sounds like there's a bit going on, but six down, two to go. What's the next one?
Rental yield. Okay, so I sort of touched on this with vacancy rates. The rental yield, obviously it's very important for servicing a loan to have good cash flow. The important thing about this statistic is not to get carried away with it. We do want to value capital growth above cash flow, but the yield I've found can be, in some cases, a precursor to capital growth. So as I mentioned before with vacancy rates, as the yield gets higher, you draw in more investors. they finally see this market as being a great cash flow play. And whatever it was that was appealing to the tenants will also be appealing to owner-occupiers. And so what you've got is owner-occupiers buying more, you've got investors buying more, you've got good cash flow, and quite often you can see some high capital growth. But you've got to be careful that you don't want a high yield based on falling prices, you want a high yield based on rising rents.
Because practically, really good tip, because practically now you've got Melbourne and Sydney having yields as low as anyone can remember, particularly for houses. So people will be looking all around the country for other markets, but that's a really good point to not use that as a sole leading indicator.
So for beginners out there, how do you calculate yield? It's a simple calculation where you work out the annual rental income divided by the value of the property to get, times by 100 over 1 to get a percentage. So that's how you work out rental yield. So if you're, really new to this, you can work out basically your rental yield by doing that calculation, timing the annual rental income and divided it by the value of the property.
But for the listeners also, Jeremy, you're trying to get to suburb level before you go granular on the property, aren't
that's
you?
Right.
So it's just median value, median rent?
Well, ideally you want to match up a property for rent with a property for sale. So you can't have, for example, you can't calculate the yield for a one-bedroom unit, which might rent for, let's say that's $400 a week, and then a three-bedroom unit in the same suburb sells for $1 million. That's a very low yield, but you're talking about a completely different market for rent as opposed to for sale. So you've really got to look for similar features. When you're trying to calculate this online, you jump onto realestate.com.au and then you look at the rental pages. You check out the condition of the properties, their age, their kitchen, bathroom, how much they rent for per week. Then you're looking for a similar property that's for sale at the same time in the same suburb. So same bedroom count, same bathroom count, same condition, and then you've got one yield that you can calculate. You do that for a number of properties in the same suburb, and then you've got the suburb's yield. And so you know roughly how much you can expect to get for whatever property pops up that you buy in that suburb.
It's a fair bit going on.
There is a lot of data being analysed, lot of data. I mean, obviously, when we decided that Jeremy was our man, we went after him because the reality is that he's got some of the best leading data, if not the best, in the marketplace in terms of measuring supply and demand and the correlation of that between capital
and one
growth.
Thing we can never accuse him of is never thinking each variable through, because even when we challenge him on it, it's like, right, he steps up and he's ready to go. So very good. And then let's round it out with the final one.
Right, okay. Renters versus owner-occupiers. So this is calculated as a proportion. If you split a suburb down the middle, well, not necessarily down the middle, if you split it up into two groups, owner-occupiers and renters, what is the proportion? Now, this is important because as an investor, you don't want to buy in a location that has a large number of other landlords that you're competing with over tenants. So you want the lowest proportion of renters to owner-occupiers as possible. And the other issue there is that owner-occupiers take much greater care of their property than tenants do. So you'll find that the properties preserve their value a lot better. And you'll also find that it's possible your owner-occupiers are in a slightly higher socioeconomic demographic. So you might be better off, you're definitely better off choosing locations that don't have a large number of investors, but rather have a high proportion of owner-occupiers. Mm. So for this statistic, which is the proportion of renters to owner-occupiers, you want the smallest figure possible. And this data comes from the Australian Bureau of Statistics. It's based on census data. So at some times it's only a year old, other times it can be up to 6 years old. So you might need some on-the-ground research when it's about 6 years old. But also the ABS, they don't actually publish this individual figure. They have about 8 or 9 categories themselves. So you've got to interpret some of their categories. Is it an owner occupier with a mortgage, without a mortgage, paid outright? Is it a retirement home? They have a number of different categories. So there's a little bit of interpretation involved there, and you could have different data suppliers are calculating their own version of this and interpreting those categories slightly differently. But yeah, it's something that doesn't change from month to month, obviously, because we've only got it from census data.
And in terms of analysing the data, have you come up with any trends in terms of what that benchmark looks like across the suburbs, or is there too much disparity?
As an investor, I wouldn't pick a market that has, say, above a 50% renters to owner occupiers, and ideally I would want something closer to 10%, and I'd say the benchmark is somewhere around 25 to 30%.
Well, we saw with the latest census data that came out that it was like rented, so when we look at that breakdown of composition, it was saying rented was 30.9, right, as an example, and that's up from 29.3. So the reality is we've got a little bit more rental coming in. And you think about that, that's logical because obviously overseas migration is still, you know, quite buoyant. And that's obviously usually people who arrive here are going to rent. They're mm-hmm. going to try before they buy in terms of getting into that market. But what we are talking about here is getting into the data at suburb level. Okay, not necessarily looking at it at state level, actually drilling down into that suburb level. And that data is about to be released, you know, by the time we go to market with the new census data. What we're talking about is by August, late August, that data should be available at that more granular level.
Mm-hmm.
So just to, you know, in terms of summarising that, Ben, in terms of understanding demand and supply, the variables that Jeremy focuses on is one, stock on market, two, auction clearance rate, three, online search interest, four, days on market, five, vacancy rate, six, vendors discount, seven, rental yield, and eight is the split or the ratio between renters and owner-occupiers. So, mate, I think one of the things that we identified there is there's a lot going on in terms of individually getting each and every one of those indicators. But I guess from your experience, and you've obviously got a bit of secret sauce around your algorithm, but how did you go through the various permutations on how you weight those particular variables? Because I'm sure we go back to, you know, when you first started in 2009, there was a weighting, and where you've got it now in 2017, I'm sure it's had plenty of iterations along the way.
Actually, I haven't changed it tremendously.
Oh, very
but,
good, thank
you.
The score went from, I think originally it was out of 48 when I first read one of your first articles
right.
many
I mean.
Years ago. Moved up to now a score out of 100.
Yeah, well, it's just a little bit more accurate, and it's much easier for people to think of a benchmark of 50.
Yeah.
If it's above 50, they're clear with that. You know, they've failed exams, they know.
Very true. So effectively what we're talking about here today is really the foundation research around location, okay? So this is phenomenally powerful at that education level for beginners and amateurs who are trying to research property. I cannot stress that enough. So
location does 80% of the heavy lifting.
It does, so it does. And these are, you know, there's obviously other variables and more in-depth analysis that you would do, but this is an amazing starting point. This is the area where you can quickly look at that. I mean, you know, I had a client ring me last night and they were like, oh, you know, we're sort of thinking about getting another investment property. You know, where are the areas right now? What do you think of these areas? What do you think of those areas? Now, how we used to do this in the past was we would get out in the field and we would be in the field and we would study that market and we'd do everything we can to get a gauge of that. But we can't be in 15,000 markets. So the amazing speed at which you can then determine markets that you can now do more granular research on is at your fingertips. And that's where, you know, that was the meeting of the minds between the three of us when we sat down and we said, well, how can we bring this to market? Because there is a lot of technical pieces of the puzzle. And, you know, those diehard researchers are going to love the more detailed opportunities that are out there. But for just generalists who want to fast track themselves into good research, that's what we've come up with. We've come up with simple ways in which to analyze the marketplace. And we talk about, you know, the different types of product offerings and how to navigate the research platform. It's all there. So it's really, really important that we did that.
Yeah, and I think, Ben, if we're true to our values, you know, if location does 80% of the heavy lifting, and it's a really important thing for our clients, our listeners, the investment community to get it right, it's important that we provide a tool that's easy for people to use. And as Jeremy said, have an indicator that gives you a reference against other suburbs. This one gets a score out of 100, this one gets a score out of 100, then you can actually compare the two. So there's a few reasons why we got together and sort of created location score. But the first one was that, isn't it? Just to educate investors the right way, give them a strong leading indicator to help them determine which suburb they need to be in.
Yeah, and you know, from that point, you then got to make sure that you can then you're going to cut some of those markets out too. Because don't forget, it's giving us an immediate, you know, real-time read on the market for that particular month. So it's not giving us forward supply. And the other thing too is, you know, if you get a high score in a particular market, you've got to be careful to also make sure you can get into that market and see where that forward supply is coming. So it's absolutely critical, and it's not easy. You know, we've just heard about the sort of the minutiae and the different moving parts and you know, how you have to look at multiple areas and make determinations on the data that you're collecting to bring it down to means or medians and those types of things to get to a score.
And I guess people just don't have the time, Jeremy, to even contemplate what you've just gone through.
Yeah, I think there's no way you can manually do it and cover the entire country, obviously. You know, with the 15,000 localities Australia-wide, that's simply not possible. And you are talking about hours and hours of work just for one suburb, but why did you pick that suburb? I have people ring me and say, hey, what do you think about suburb XYZ? And I say, never heard of it, let me look it up. And within a minute, you know, I'm telling them, thumbs up or thumbs down or do some of your own research. It's a maybe. And there's usually a pause at the end of the phone, you know, well, what's going on there? And all I can say is, well, demand is exceeding supply or supply is exceeding demand. But like you were saying before, Ben, you know, you used to put people out in the field. Now it's like look up research. And although it's not complete, it's not comprehensive, it puts you in the ballpark. It triggers alarm bells if there's a problem. And it gives you the thumbs up to spend that more exhaustive time if it's okay.
Yeah, totally. So you're gonna be able to identify 10 or 15 suburbs that you want to research that could have taken 100 hours to determine that. And what normally happens is people get overwhelmed. You know, once they start getting into that process, they get overwhelmed with, I don't know, you know, is that really important? Is that not important? Well, we're telling you, we've been doing this collectively for 50 years, and we absolutely know that these variables are foundation variables. So don't cut corners, just follow the system, follow the process, we know it works.
And for those that actually do the research, Ben, it gets pretty expensive, because if you want to get some information, some data on a suburb basis and then stack that up across quite a few, that can start to rack up very quickly.
Yep.
But I guess overall, Jeremy, what would you say that it that having that, you know, what would location score provide for people who are, you know, pretty keen about research?
Yeah, well, the big thing for me is that it's a safety net. So you're not going to look up location score and see a score of like 22 and jump into that development project that the taxi driver was recommending. You've got this safety net. That's no blight on taxi drivers. Some of them are great investors. But just want to say that it's checking your blind spots. It gives you an alert, an alarm. It's a safety net. It just makes it so much easier to make sure that you're not making a monumental mistake.
So I guess for our listeners, Ben, too, I know you've got a point to make, but you know, this is a product that we've developed, and largely for the entire existence of this podcast, it's been an ad-free space.
Yep.
But what we're providing for people is a solution that allows them to one of the biggest decisions that they're going to make, allow them to decipher that information and bring it to their reality quickly. And of course, it costs us money to bring it to market, but we think we've made it pretty competitive in terms of its price.
Yeah, well, absolutely we have. I mean, we don't think that people are going to need this indefinitely. I mean, once you buy, you buy. But we've got a subscription-based model which allows people to choose the level of interest and how long they want to be working with it. So there's a weekly, there's a monthly, and there's a quarterly price point. And the best part about that is it's under $100.
Mm.
Like, you know, in terms of how you want to look at it, it's absolutely very, very reasonably priced. So for weekly access, we're talking about $47,
yep.
You know, which is just, for again, just the time saver alone is going to be pretty incredible. You know, then we've got our monthly, which is $67. So it's an ongoing subscription until you cancel it. Or, you know, obviously the best value of all is $97
for a quarter,
for three months.
Yeah.
So you can get, you know, you can start to track some markets and do those types of things as well. So it's really, really important to understand that there is definitely savings if you buy the quarterly result, but it's there. So you can try it for under $50,
yeah.
Get some amazing insights, validate certain suburbs that you might already hold properties in, you know, validate your own suburb. You know, you're going to determine whether some of the properties that you've got in your portfolio are how they're positioned for growth in the short term. So there's an amazing amount of value that you're going to see in being able to do that, and because we've made it so easy to use.
Yeah, very easy, Ben. So for anyone that's interested in checking that out, go to locationscore.com.au. There's a video there that you can check out. You can even put your own suburb in and check out the location score of your own suburb. So we absolutely recommend you go there, Ben. But if someone gets a score of, I don't know, call it 67, how are they going to interpret that?
Yeah, look, I mean, again, this is about easy to understand, easy to use. So there's two simple things you do with this product. It's so easy to use. The score, you put a suburb in and it'll give you a score. And it'll give a score out of 100. Nice and simple to understand that. Now, you might be thinking, well, 15,000 suburbs, does that mean I have to go through every one of those suburbs? No, this is the other bit of gold that's inside the platform. And that is the Fast Track 250. So basically what we're talking about there is you can put in a city, you know, the capital cities, and you can get the result right across that capital city. So it's giving you the best scores in that particular capital city. You can also do it by state, and you can also get the national score. So straight away, you know, how I would use it, I would be going, give me the national, and then the markets that I think I'm interested in, let me have a look at those, you know, in terms of more detail. And then once I can see some of those higher scores and my other data that I'm looking at in terms of is spiking my interest in those particular areas, whether it be lifestyle drivers, transport, those types of more granular stuff, you can then go, okay, well, I've done that. Now I'm going to go into the suburb level. When you get into the suburb level, it gives you that overall score at the top, but it also breaks down the 8 variables, the key indicators, and you can see the trend in the data in those 8 key indicators. So you can get more familiar with, you know, how the scores are being derived from looking at those indicators.
And Jeremy, the users of Location Score can then get the benefit of the algorithm that you've created for the weighting of each of those variables.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there's a lot of work that goes into the machine that's done under the covers. And it may seem simple. You just type in a suburb and up it pops, or as Ben said, you look for the top 250. But there's an enormous amount of number crunching that's gone around behind that, and a huge amount of experience into the munging of that data and how it's weighted. So although it's very fast, it's still very effective. And like Ben said, that's exactly how I would go and find my next market. You just look at the top 250, and then you're at least in the ballpark.
Mm.
So this is cutting out an enormous number of no-go zones and bringing you down to like the top 1% of markets around the country. And then you can do your more in-depth research and you know, go and pay a visit, obviously. But at least your time is well spent, rather than just guessing at which markets are the top markets.
Mm. And what's at risk here is serious capital growth.
Mm.
I mean, this is all about trying to get a superior return on your money. You know, at the end of the day, Bryce, you call it a you know, basically a bricks and mortar bank account. That's what it is. And there are different markets. Markets within markets, and certain properties and certain locations perform better than others in certain times. So this is really, you know, about understanding supply and demand in the cycle at this time. And that's the power of it.
Yeah, and our hope, Ben, is for our community to get their time back. So
yep.
So they don't have to go 10 years down the track and realise in the rear vision mirror that they could have made a different decision back then. So that's what it's all about. So folks, check it out, locationscore.com.au. And I think there's a sneaky little promo for our loyal community, Ben.
Yeah, there is. So obviously for our loyal listeners, we want to do a 20% discount for you as Property Couch listeners. So the code... The special code is TPC20, okay, and that's going to be available for 4 weeks. So if you want to check it out and get a 20% discount off those prices, then jump on now. And we thank you, everyone, for the feedback that you've given us in terms of what you want to see. That will allow us to obviously go away and start developing more research tools, more research insights to continue to keep educating property buyers, both investors and for owner occupiers.
We had an enormous response to that call out, Ben. We've asked people to give us what their top two were for the research. So just shows people have got an enormous appetite to get it right. If you know,
yeah, and we read that stuff, and we are looking at ways in which we can potentially incorporate this into whether it be location score or dsrdata.com.au or you know a super platform one day down the track, which is you know ultimately our vision.
Well, you mentioned DSR data. That's for the serious property investors who love their data. But you know, for the general property investor, location score will do a lot of that heavy lifting for them. So, terrific, Jeremy. Thanks for coming on and explaining your passion, the vision that's pulled you towards location score and what you've been doing with research. So, mate, we appreciate your time.
Always happy to talk about property data.
And obviously, we're going to get you on more often to get some of the insights and things that you're seeing in the market, given you know the beauty of the data that you're obviously now got access to and you've been collecting for many, many years now. So there's that, and obviously, the more sophisticated some of our listeners get, we will talk about you know dsrdata.com.au into the future. So a lot going on. And that's exciting for us because it is all about making sure that your money is spent wisely and you recover that time, you know, in terms of making sure you get back to your lives.
Yeah, well said, Ben. And there was a lot going on there. So if we've got some people who are interested in looking at that visually, we've got a webinar coming up that they can check out as well if you just need to see a little bit more detail. So we'll have details of that webinar on locationscore.com.au. It'll also be on Facebook. So check that out. So again, thanks for coming on, Jeremy. We'll love to chat all things research with you, and we'll see you on the next one. But Ben, for me, just before we go,
sure.
Life hack. You know,
hit me.
Now this will come as a surprise to you, but you know how I'm a bit of a fan of Evernote.
Right. That's every week. You must be on a free subscription by now, surely. Well, those Evernote listeners out there, you know,
they should be paying me, shouldn't they? But they're not. It's plug free. But one, there's another one that I'm on, is Nozbe.
You on their payroll?
Nozbe. I'd like to be, but
Nozbe.
So if you think you know, in terms of if I'm carrying around a notebook, you know, the old A4 notebooks, you write all your notes down. Yep. That's what Evernote is to me.
Yep.
But then I've got a little to-do list. Nozbe becomes my to-do list. It's available across all of my devices, and what it enables me to do is put tasks in projects and also categories. So I'm a big fan of batching. So if I've got to make some calls, I'll just make a little note in Nozbe to tag it, call, and then I'll get up and I'll go and make 5 calls in a row. Or if I've got to block myself off and not get any distractions, I'll lock myself in a room, I'll go and look at my create or my design tag. So that's
insight, but can that be embedded into Evernote or it's just another little app?
Well, I've actually used Evernote as my to-do list in the past and it actually was quite good for me. But it's better.
Okay.
Yeah. So just in full disclosure, it's a subscription. I think it's, I think it's like $90 a year or something, right?
So so you paid, and again, it's a free plug.
It's a free plug. But all my life hacks, and as I said to you, I'm getting under enormous pressure to make sure the ones that I use, but Nozbe is something I use daily. If something comes up, and no problem, I whack it in because I can do it on my desktop, I can do it on my iPhone, I can do it on my tablet either. So Nozbe, check it out. We'll put a link on our social media. So that you can check that out if you want. But that's me, mate. If you want to be efficient, Evernote and Nozbe.
Oh, sounds good. Rightio, did you know? Well, I mean, I'm still excited about location score. But anyway, did you know the current queen,
it's
Queen Lizzie?
Yeah.
All right, Elizabeth. Okay, so she came to the throne in 1952.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, back in 1952, there were 40 people in Australia who got a letter from Lizzie.
Wow.
What'd they get the letter for?
Turning 100.
Turning 100.
My great-grandmother got a letter from the Queen.
Wow, good on her. Mm-hmm. She's still around?
No.
No, understandably so. She'd be pretty old, wouldn't she?
She would.
Okay, so last year, in 2016, guess what? 2,600 people got the letter. She must be busy. Lizzie must be sitting at her desk
licking those stamps.
Just basically, you know, how can we, she's probably saying, how can we automate this? Can I send them an email instead? Mate, but yeah, that, I mean, that just goes to show you.
Tell you what
you.
She does. She puts every single one in Nosby, bang, ticks them off, gets them done. No,
beautiful. So yeah, 2016.
We're living longer.
We are living longer. And what's the message there? If we're going to be living longer, we're going to need a little bit more moolah, a little bit more cash to live a long and fulfilling life in retirement.
But you know the good part about that, Ben? The longer you live, the more powerful compounding is.
That's true.
So the more wealth you'll create. So it all depends on what decisions you make in your 30s and 40s and maybe 20s.
That's true. And I've been doing a bit of analysis. I think I'll bring it to a podcast in the future. But you know, here's a little sneak peek. It's called the Rule of 40.
Right.
And I'm just sort of throwing it out there straight off the, and it's basically the rule is you've got to work for 40 years. Which 40 years you work hard for is up to you. But just think about that. Like, you know, millennials who are working a little bit early, you know, like working from basically hand to mouth, just having a good time. But there's a 40-year batch where you're working for your future.
Right.
So I'm just, you know, playing with that because, you know, our post-war, I don't want to go into it now because I'll tell it all.
Oh, mate, you can't have yourself, look at you. I've heard of the 40-40-40 plan, 40 minutes to work for 40 hours a week for 40 years, but that's a new one.
Well, it's just sort
of saying...
So that's
an extension.
It's just basically, you're just sort of saying that you've got to be serious about wealth creation over a 40-year period. If you can do that, you'll be exceptionally well off. You know, so it's just
snuck a little bit of gold right at the end.
Well,
there.
I'm just sort of playing with the process because the world has changed and the baby boom has done an enormous amount of heavy lifting for us.
I don't know how you
here
sleep.
I go again. I'm telling
I don't know
you
how you it. Sleep at night, Ben, being that good. But mate, obviously we've unpacked a fair bit.
We have
today the 8 variables what come to supply and demand. We've provided a solution. There's life hacks all over the place. So I think this has been a good exercise for you and me, Ben. But I wonder if you remember what your sign off is.
My sign off is. Remember, knowledge is empowering, but only if you act on it, Bryce.
Oh, that annoys me, Ivers.
Just straight off the top.
Straight off the top. But, mate, been terrific. Thanks again, Jeremy, for joining us. We look forward to having you on in the future. Ben, as always, thanks for being on the couch with me.
See you later.
And until next week.
25.
See ya.
Later.